Mute yourself, please.
Thank you, Maddie. And I am so grateful for the invitation and the opportunity to do some service. And I tell you, I've gotten so much from the meetings this morning. One thing that I heard that I wrote down is that God is a better parent than me. And I'm going to take that with me. I just want to say that I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. I've been in the rooms for a few 24 hours. And I attended face-to-face meetings when they were available here in South Carolina and Georgia. And I do attend the All People of Color. That's been a blessing for me in the COVID to find that those meetings. So I am the mother of a 34-year-old son. He's creative. He's handsome. He is now a father. And his drinking bothers me. And so I just want to read something to get started, just to help me to stay on track. It's from this book, Opening Our Hearts, Transforming Our Losses, page 84. And it's just, a few quotes from this book. It says, I am learning to let go of my concerns about my son's welfare so that he can turn to his higher power for help. Our impulse to rescue our children may actually prevent them from finding their own solutions. What we can do is turn our children over to our higher power's care. When my adult children aren't behaving as I think they should, I try to remember to live and let live. When I think they are in trouble, I remind myself that I can't fight their battles for them. Though it's painful to see them stumble, I must let go and let God. It's hard enough for me to stay on my own path. One way I can honor my children is by letting them walk theirs. And this has been really key for me, to really get out of his way and to put him in my higher power's care. So this part here about our impulse to rescue our children. So the highs and lows. The high for me was really when, you know, I got pregnant with this boy 34 years ago. He was baked in insanity. When I got pregnant with him, I was with his father. We were married, had been married for 2 years. I've been dealing with this man who had an addiction. He was in dental school, but still, you know, had this addiction. And so I thought, you know, the cure to our, you know, make our marriage better, we should have a child. And so went to my doctor. He was like, you know, your chances of getting pregnant, you know, just like a million to one or something like that. Well, lo and behold, you know, I had this miracle child. He was going to be born. And so all the time I was pregnant, though, it was like craziness. So he was baked in insanity. He was born. I attended Al-Anon, my first Al-Anon meeting with him. He was probably about a year old in Washington, D.C. That's where he was born. That's where I was living at the time, that area. And so we attended Al-Anon. I brought him with me, and people were so gracious there. To let me bring my little toddler. Subsequently, I decided because I wanted to rescue him, not so much that, you know, I was wanted to rescue myself, but I wanted to rescue this little boy from this craziness that was our marriage and our life. And so I left, you know, his dad, moved to Virginia, asked my father, can I come back home? He said, yeah, come on home. And brought my little child with me. And subsequently divorced his dad. So this, you know, I was a single mom. I heard the first sharer share, and her story was so much like mine. So I was a single mom at the time and doing what I had to do, you know, to take care of my son. His dad was still in DC, and, you know, I felt so much guilt at, you know, breaking up our family. I was the one that broke the family up. But, you know, I knew that I had to get out of there. Never mind that I was being physically assaulted, you know, whatever. I just knew I had to get that child out of that family situation. My biggest fear was that he would also inherit the disease of alcoholism. His grandfather was an alcoholic. His father, you know, was an alcoholic addict. My brother was also an alcoholic. So that was my biggest fear. And I was doing everything I could to protect him from the disease of alcoholism. Well, fast forward, he's now, you know, growing up. He's in high school. Things are, you know, getting crazy. He doesn't want to, you know, he's really rebellious, angry all the time. And so I thought that surely, you know, I didn't think about alcoholism then, but I just thought that, you know, I just need to clamp down a little bit harder. I remarried. And so that, you know, we brought along those problems too of adjusting to a new family dynamic. And but anyways, he started having problems in school. He got he was on Ritalin, so I thought maybe that was his problem. You know, he was had this ADHD, so, you know, I'm doing everything I could to help him to get better, taking him to these doctors and, you know, putting him on his medicine. Well, one day he decided he's not going to take medicine anymore. So he would just take his medicine to school and give it to other kids. Well, how about this? I got a call from school one day that, you know, for me to come and get him. That he had given another kid some medicine. This kid was acting out in school and told that, you know, my son had given him medicine. Well, they kicked him out, went to tribunal. He had to go to alternative school. And so that to me, even though I wasn't connecting, you know, his behavior with any alcoholism or anything, that really started this whole thing of me just focusing so much on this child. He, like someone else mentioned, you know, became my God, even affected, you know, my marriage in a certain respect, because I was just putting all my energy, you know, into this child and trying to shield him from things. When he got out of the alternatives, he spent a semester in the alternative school. And when he got out of the alternative school, I didn't want him, because surely those other kids were, you know, influencing him. I wanted to get him away from those kids that were like bad influences on him. And so I took him to this interview at this Catholic school who had a few children. The school he went to had a few children that looked like him. I like the way that Willie said it, that had his tan. Well, this school had even less children, you know, that looked like him. He was determined. He did not want to go to that school. And I took him for that interview, and he acted a pure ass at that school. I mean, at the interview. I mean, and the person who was interviewing is like, we know we don't take children like him. And so, wow, I mean, that was just a blow to me. I was just so ashamed. So anyway, he went back to the public school with those friends that, you know, bad influences. Well, my goal was to get him graduated from high school. So I put all my energy and attention into getting him graduated from high school. He graduated. So the next step was for him to go to college. Because that was always, you know, in my family, education was, you know, the way out, you know, so it was very important for him to go to college, even though, you know, I mean, he wasn't so interested in going to college. But I applied for colleges, you know, for him, and he got accepted to a college, Savannah State University, and he went, not knowing, you know, what he was going to, you know, major in. You know, his mom wanted him to go to college, you know, so I'm just pushing him along, you know, just being his God, pushing him along. Well, he was 7 years in college, and while he was in college, there were still signs, you know, I'm still in denial that, you know, he's having a problem with alcohol. But it took him 7 years, and he finally graduated. That was a high, you know, that graduation day was a high, even though, you know, I felt like, you know, whew, you know, I got him graduated, right? And so he wanted to come back home. I wish, you know, a wish for him was that he would stay in Savannah, find him a job, you know, go and live his life. Because, you know, I have launched him, right? And so he decided he didn't want to stay in Savannah. He wanted to come back. We were living in Augusta, Georgia at the time. So he wanted to come back to Augusta. Okay, well, I'll give him a chance. You can come back to Augusta. Came back to Augusta after he graduated. And so I'm going to help him to find a job. I'm just all this helping, you know, that I'm doing. Help him to find a job. And so I asked one of my friends, you know, she had, you know, a place, you know, she was in a position where she could hire. And so he went for the interview and he didn't get the job. I mean, he did well. They did a drug test, came back. He could not get a job because he had so much marijuana in his system. She said, Kim, it was like through the roof, you know, whatever the, you know, and I guess they have like, you know, a range that they can hire still. Whatever his was, it was like over their range. They couldn't hire him. So meanwhile, he was going out to bars every night. I mean, every night he was going to a bar, you know. And I'm like, okay, when is this going to end? I give him like a grace period. Okay, you're out of school. And, you know, it just got to be every single night. Well, when I really figured out, I was going to Al-Anon at this time. I was back in Al-Anon. So I had left out that I had really, when I started focusing on this child, I really, you know, put my Al-Anon stuff down and, you know, went on, you know, to him. It got focused on him. Well, I had come back into Al-Anon while he was in, I think while he was in college. And did not realize until, this was a few years down the road, that his drinking was starting to bother me. His going out to bars every night and not getting a job, that was bothering me. It's like, what is going on here? And I kept saying, you know, I would say in my Al-Anon meetings, you know, this, you know, my son is a failure to launch. You know, he's a failure to launch. You know, I don't know what's going on with him. So one of the things that it says in here that when my adult children aren't behaving as I think they should. And so that was me. I thought that he should have a job. He should have a good job. He has a college education. He has a degree. He shouldn't be going out to bars every night. You know, the thing that really got my attention, though, is that this boy may have this disease that I was dreading that he would have, was one night he went out. He came home. This is on a Saturday. I had to go to work on that Saturday. I got a call from work. Mom, my car has been stolen. So I'm like, oh my God, you know, cars don't really get stolen in the place where we live, but okay. It's like, where is his car? Wasn't out there. So I run home. I come back home. I'm looking, you know, as I'm coming home to see if, you know, anybody has his car. Well, I see his car. It's like over in the side of a ditch, you know, somewhere. So, and I, when I got back home, I could smell. I mean, this liquor had been like, it's like permeating his skin. He had a blackout and he didn't realize that someone, he finally eventually remembered that someone, he had ran his car into a ditch. Someone had picked him up and he was only like maybe 2 miles from home, picked him up, brought him home. So it's like, okay, there's a problem there. So, you know, I decided, my husband left. We separated because he just, you know, he and this grown boy, it was like, you know, going head, you know, this grown man that was in the house, two grown men in the house. And apparently I was still, you know, babying him and he didn't like that. So he left. And so I just decided that something had to change. And like someone else did, you know, wrote their son, wrote him a letter. I did the same thing. You know, people suggested that I had to detach. I had to put some boundaries for me. And so I started to do that. And, you know, really the lowest of low, I think, came for me when about a few months ago, he got a DUI. He got stopped. And he called me, you know, he told me, Ma, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I got stopped by the police. And, my heart is racing because he's a young black man being stopped by the police in Augusta, Georgia. And so I'm just calling to tell you, to let you know, I got stopped by the police, I guess, you know. So I'm thinking all the bad things that could happen. They got him for a DUI. And so long story short, the cop asked him if he wanted to go to the hospital or something. Anyway, he didn't go to jail that night. The cop took him to a hospital, dropped him off. But by that time, I had had enough Al-Anon to know that there's nothing that I can do, that he has to walk, you know, his own path and suffer the consequences. And I had decided that I was not going to help him. You know, I mean, he had to figure it out. Whatever he had to do with his DUI, he had to figure it out. And so, but then I started thinking about court systems and how people are mistreated because of, you know, their skin color. And he may not get the same shake as, you know, somebody else may get. And the people in my meetings, you know, were telling me, I mean, they had experience, strength, and hope of sons going to jail and, you know, all that. and you know how they could just let their sons go to jail. And I was like, I just can't, you know, just let him fend for himself in the justice system, because there's not the same justice. And so I decided I could do what I could do. And what I could do was offer that I could help him to find an attorney. And so I did that. And that I talked to my husband, and we said we could help him to pay, you know, for the attorney, a portion, not all of it. I mean, just a portion, whatever we were willing to do. And he could pay for the rest. And so he said, okay, got the attorney. And, you know, so it's been difficult. That was painful. He ended up having to go to jail. He had a terrible experience. You know, he was supposed to just go there to show up, you know, sign out because, you know, he paid his bond or whatever. But he ended up spending a whole night in jail with some people that, you know, rough people. So what I've been learning really in Al-Anon is that to live and let live, and that when he's in trouble, that to know that I can't fight his battle for him. And that's been really, really tough. It's been tough. Thank you. Thank you, Maddie. And so that's been tough, but I use all of my program tools. I go to meetings. I have a sponsor, and I thank her for being on the call, you know, on this platform today, Sarah. And you know, I share and I pray. And one of the things that I've learned is that it says what we can do is turn our children over to our higher power's care. That means that I have to have a higher power. And that means that I have to have a close relationship with the higher power. So even during this pandemic, my relationship, and during all of this, my relationship with my higher power has grown. And I can constantly turn him over, turn situations over. And I just want to leave with this. This is on page 85. And it says, our children's lives may not have turned out the way we had hoped, but we can't prevent them from learning the lessons they are meant to learn today. Whatever problems they may be facing are theirs to face. They have their own path, their own journey. Though it may be unclear to us now, perhaps our children are meant to go through exactly what they are going through for a reason. And with that, I'll close and just say how grateful I am for a higher power. And for this program, Al-Anon, who knew that when I came in 34 years ago for his father, that today, God knew that today I would need Al-Anon for him. So thank you for letting me share. For me,
Thank you
actually, for me.
so much. Let's unmute and thank Kim.
Thank you so much.